X marks the spot for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that listens to you. He thinks Peaky Blinders is a very silly name for a show. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Doug Jones. As Drew McMillan, our announcer, said, I am your Medicare expert. And whatever Drew says, I pay careful attention to because he is a terrific young man. He's one of my two nephews in Canada. I have two nephews and a niece in Canada, and they're all very accomplished, very highly intelligent, and very hilarious people. And now they're growing into adulthood. They're pretty funny as kids. I hope they stay funny as adults. Anyway, Drew just told you that I was your Medicare expert, so let's go with that, shall we? The whole point of this exercise is to help you feel comfortable approaching Medicare. There are people in the audience who have either turned 65, they're looking at turning 65, or maybe they've worked past the age of 65 and they're considering retirement and giving up their employer health insurance plan. Those are the people that are going to have to make the transition from regular Obamacare to Medicare. And some people are trepidatious about it, but I have news for you. It is not going to be problematic for most people. It is going to be an improvement in your cash flow, an improvement in the quality of the protection that you're given, smaller deductibles, better cost, and ultimately better protection against the possibly painful, expensive Medicare or medical treatments that you're maybe going to need if you're not lucky. So the whole point is protecting yourself against outrageous medical bills in a different way. That's what crossing into Medicare means. You're going to be participating in a forced government program, but you'll have the opportunity to buy some ancillary products that will complete your protection. And you will find that the cost of those products is pretty darn reasonable. That's what I'm here for. I am a licensed insurance agent. I'm licensed in all states and DC. And if you have questions, comments, or if you need additional, if you need Medicare supplement insurance, or if you want to talk about Medicare Advantage program, I'm your guy. I'm happy to discuss these things for you. I just woke in Randy up with that mention of Medicare disadvantage plans. I'm sorry to have shocked him like that. Randy, join us. Tell us how you're doing today.
You woke me up out of a perfectly good nap.
Well, it was probably time to wake up anyway because you're going to have to push some buttons and so forth.
I heard you say Medicare disadvantage plans, and that just woke me. That was almost like a nightmare.
Well, there might be some audience members that haven't been privy to our opinion of Medicare Advantage plans, and so we have to do a little educating for some people. But I was volunteering to do that for anyone who wants to contact me and ask for advice or ask for opinions as to what they should do for Medicare.
Well, there's a couple things. You know, I'm just an old cowboy from the Midwest, Western Nebraska. There's a couple things I would like to share with you folks to make it real, real simple. There's a reason that they put Part C for Medicare Advantage.
Is that short for something?
That Part C actually is very descriptive, and it is short for the Medicare Advantage plans. It stands for crap.
Well, that's a very direct way of saying it. I dance around it a little bit. I try to be a little more diplomatic, but I get to the same conclusion that you have. By the way, our last episode, I concentrated on coronavirus stories, and we've got a little bit more of that left for today. But you told me you wanted to share something with the audience.
Well, there's a couple different things that I wanted to share. Was that bottom line is, I know that everybody is talking about corona right now, but there's some folks in this world, especially in the United States, that are now trying to get us all wired up about monkeypox. So let's not fall for that trick, because that's yet to come. And then you can also, you know, probably indicate to some of the conversation that I mentioned in one of our early podcasts that some friends of mine had, you know, just about every vaccination on the books and then some. And unfortunately, they're both laying at home now, sick with COVID.
But the important thing there is they're laying at home. When you and Margaret got it a year and a half ago, you guys did some time in stir. You were each hauled off to the hospital.
As I used to describe it, Doug, I now know what the zombie apocalypse is going to look like.
And can you describe that in more detail to us?
They kept me in isolation for 2 weeks, and I wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. I wasn't allowed to look at anybody, and everybody that came in to, you know, throw some food underneath the door crack had, you know, like a hazmat suit on with an oxygen hose. So
they were asking you questions, though. They were assessing your mental acuity.
Yeah. The first day, I think it was the second day I was there, they said, you know, Randy, we've got some questions to ask. And I imagine it was related to the fact that I was, there on Medicare. And we have these questions to ask, and we're not allowed to help you. Okay. All right. I'll do it my best. And they said, where are you? And I said, that's a really good question. I said, I'm in a hospital. And they said, well, okay, you're doing good so far. Where at? And I said, I don't have any. So the next day, me being the relatively sharp dude that I think I am some days, I'm a software engineer. So I pulled out my good old iPhone before they came in to confirm my questions for the next day. And I said, I got out my GPS application and I looked up where I was and I wrote it down on my napkin so I wouldn't forget. And so they go, where are you at? And I go, oh, I'm at Banner Health. I go, oh, wow, you're improving. I said, and in my mind, I'm just like, no, not really. I just know how to run my iPhone.
Oh, boy. Well, I wouldn't have been that good. I had a reaction to the second of the two vaccine injections that I had back in early 21, February and March. And so for about a day, I had that COVID fog that you obviously were in for longer than that. And I realized that I'd been sitting for hours in front of the television with my laptop on my lap, trying to figure out how to send an email with an attached file to a client. And I couldn't do it. I could not figure it out. It was beyond me. The skill was just something I had lost. And I thought, oh God, I've had it for this world. But anyway, so thanks for sharing that information with us. It is COVID day here again, because I wanted to finish up the articles that I had that I started with last time. And the article I was working on, it was pretty lengthy, but it was describing the problems employers are having in keeping their workplaces healthy and their workers out of the hospital or whatever. And because of varying types of facilities and so forth, each employer is faced with different unique problems. So just to finish that up, we were talking about an employer in Massachusetts who has a display of colored armbands, and the colored armbands are either green, yellow, or red, and they are for employees to wear to signify their level of comfort with being around unmasked coworkers. I say this is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Well, I've heard a lot of dumb things. So, and I showed Randy a photograph of the display. It sits on a table and it's got red and yellow and green armbands and masks. At this company, masks are optional, but the company uses a color-coded bracelet system that allows workers to convey their preference. Workers wear a green bracelet if they're comfortable with colleagues going maskless around them, yellow if they're wearing a mask but don't expect others to, and red if they want everybody in their vicinity to mask up. And frankly, you know, depending on how good looking or not your coworkers are, I can see the validity of asking them to mask up in some cases.
Is that anything like a two bagger?
Yeah, it'd be like chewing your arm off so you don't.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask before you move on, in case you need to look it up, is this company that's got these armbands are there armband police if people are not paying attention?
Well, ironic you should mention that. There's an HR woman who made the chief executive. She said most people that she's noticed in their facility wear yellow or green bracelets. She has not seen too many reds. So not too many of their employees are concerned about people going maskless near them. On the other hand, it says they also use sensors on employees' company ID badges that help managers instantly identify workers who were within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes of a colleague who tested positive. How in the heck did they do that?
Okay. Now we're stepping way over the line.
So the answer to your question is yes, obviously the police are working overtime. At least at this particular company, the COVID Nazis, the sensors download the information to a database to help managers notify workers who may have been exposed. Now, what if you work next to somebody within 6 feet of somebody for only 10 minutes? Then apparently you're okay. So they're this 15 minutes, very arbitrary.
Well, now what's going to happen, Doug, is they've got this information downloaded and, you know, the yellow person's getting next to a red person. And then all that's going to happen is the floor is going to open up and they're going to drop them down into some sort of a little tank. And that'll be the end of them.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah. I'm starting to see who was that girl that worked for that oil company in Oklahoma, worked at a nuclear power plant, and they kept blowing the whistle on her and giving her scrub down showers. And who was that? That was
I know who you're talking about. I can't pull the name out, but yeah, I absolutely know who you're talking about. I'll look it up.
It was like their punishment for her being a whistleblower, and eventually she died in a car accident out on a country road in Oklahoma, I guess, near the nuclear power plant that she worked in. But so anyway, going on with the description of this particular company, plotting COVID office strategy is even more complex for companies such as Wayfair, an online retailer headquartered in Boston with about 4,500 workers, but thousands more in warehouses and other offices spread across the country and in Europe. For instance, Wayfair requires vaccination for employees in its headquarters and other offices, but not in its warehouses, where workers are less likely to be in close contact and are more likely to push back on that rule. I think that's the clue here. They're not going to require vaccination for employees that are likely to push back. And this is what we all should be doing. We should push back against this overweening desire for a certain political party to clamp down on freedoms in society. This really hacks me off, I'll tell you. There are different rules for testing as well. Office workers are tested about twice a week in pooled samples. If a batch indicates that a positive sample, everybody in that batch is retested and must work from home for a day until they're cleared. But warehouse workers are individually swabbed for faster turnaround time. These team members have to be on the ground moving boxes, so losing 24 hours for everybody in a pool is not sustainable. Masking is optional in Wayfair offices, but in warehouses where many workers may not be vaccinated, masks are required when community transmission levels of the virus are deemed high risk by the CDC. That means we need to be flexible. This guy's name is Gulliver. Now, is he in the land of giants or the land of midgets? Anyway, that means we need to be flexible, Gulliver said. We may need to have masks and then drop masks. Why don't you just drop the masks altogether and come to your senses? One issue that companies have increasingly had to deal with since most federal and state mask rules have ended is mask shaming. Oh, I wish I had clicked on this. This is a hot link. I should have clicked on this. With some workers ridiculing others who continue to use face coverings. Yeah, you know, that's one thing I don't care about. Let them wear masks if they want, as long as they're not trying to make me wear a mask. So Erin Britt, a spokeswoman for CVS Health, with 12,000 employees in Massachusetts and about 300,000 employees nationwide, put it this way. We have communicated to all of our employees that we support employees wearing masks at work if they feel comfortable doing that. Masks are only required for employees in their minute clinics, she said. Most companies have a plan for alerting workers who may have been exposed to a colleague who tested COVID positive, calling or emailing those affected. but they must be discreet because federal privacy rules restrict employers from sharing personal health information about any employee. Which is it going to be, the privacy or the contamination? You make up your minds, ladies and gentlemen. The CDC recommends that unvaccinated people and those not yet boosted who are exposed to an infected person quarantine for 5 days. I got to go home, Randy.
We're not even supposed to be talking to each other, Doug. I mean, we're like 12 miles apart. And I'm not even supposed to be talking to you because you haven't been boosted this week.
You see my red armband? That means you should be wearing a mask when you talk to me through the screen. So please don't talk to me anymore. Talk to the hand.
Oh, my. You know, pretty soon they're going to start telling us that, you know, the COVID can crawl through the digital internet. You know, I looked up another term, you know, and I said, you know, people are just going to drop into a hole.
Uh-huh.
So those folks that are on the podcast that know French. Okay, I looked up the term. I looked up the term for what was entering my mind, and the term is oubliette.
Okay, now what does that term mean?
Oubliette is a tiny little cell that you can't lay down in. You have to stand up in. That was invented for French castles, and if they just wanted to throw you away and didn't want to have anything to do with you, and didn't want to hear from you, and didn't want to spend too much money building you a cell. They had these little tiny cells called oubliettes underneath the floor in the castle, and they would just pitch you down in there, basically you never got out, and you were dead after a little while.
Well, I imagine that didn't smell that good. Once they got a bunch of people down there that are croaked and not smelling that good.
I think that's what was in. I was envisioning was, you know, people falling in, you know, as they, you know, these little. Green and yellow and red wristbands.
If two red
people got together,
right?
You know, the oubliette would pop open, and Joe would be gone, and Fred would be gone with him.
Well, I'm telling you, leave it to the French to screw up things again. See, all it took. Well, they did acquit themselves well in World War I, but in World War II, they could not wave their white flags fast enough. So, oubliettes or not.
If it wasn't for us, they'd be speaking German.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that makes me wonder what would happen if the same circumstances arose today. So I've got one more coronavirus article, and I'm hoping that this is going to be the end of it. I don't want to bore everybody with this stupidity any further than we have to, but this headline is Politics and Pandemic Fatigue Doom California's COVID Vaccine Mandates. So this is kind of a victory chant for those of us who don't believe that the government has a right to order people to get vaccinated. This article was dated June 13th, so it's just a couple of days old. In Sacramento in January, progressive California Democrats, progressive means lefty liberal pinkos, California Democrats voted to adopt the toughest COVID vaccine requirements in the country. Their proposals would have required most Californians to get the shots to go to school or to go to work without allowing exemptions to get out of them. Months later, and that was January, so here we are in June, so I'm guessing this is 5 months later. The lawmakers have pulled their bills before the first votes. One major vaccine proposal survives but faces an uphill battle. It would allow children ages 12 to 17 to get a COVID-19 vaccination without parental permission. At least 10 other states permit some minors to do this. Democrats blame the failure of their vaccine mandates on the changing nature and perception of the panic. They say that the measures became unnecessary as case rates declined earlier this year, and the public became less focused on the panic. Besides, they argued, the state isn't vaccinating enough children, so requiring shots for attendance would shut too many kids out of school. Political pressure from businesses and public safety groups and from moderate Democrats, along with vocal opposition from anti-vaccine activists, also contributed. Now, even as case rates start to balloon again, where are they ballooning again, for Christ's sake? And who cares about case rates? It's death rates or hospitalization rates that we should be concerned about, ladies and gentlemen. Just because a million people get a disease, if it doesn't kill you, send you to the hospital, or lay you low for any lengthy period of time, then case rates are meaningless as far as I'm concerned. Now, however, let's see, back to this article, even as case rates start to balloon again, the window of opportunity to adopt COVID vaccine mandates may have closed. Given the concerns around mandates and all the pushback states have received on this, they are hesitant to really move forward. Federal mandates have stalled in the courts and the legislation is just not being enacted. Other states have also largely failed to adopt COVID vaccine requirements this year. Washington, D.C. was the only jurisdiction to pass legislation to add COVID vaccine to the list of required immunizations for K through 12 students once the shots have received full federal authorization for kids of those ages. A public school mandate adopted by Louisiana was rescinded in May. The most popular vaccine legislation has been to ban COVID vaccine mandates of any kind, which at least 19 states did, according to the National Academy for State Health Policy. In California, the landscape has shifted radically in just a few months. In January, a group of liberal pinko Democrats unveiled 8 bills to require vaccinations, combat misinformation, that means to clamp down on the freedom of speech, improve vaccine data. 2 were sweeping mandates that would have required employees of most indoor businesses to get shots, and added COVID vaccine to the list of immunizations required for schools. It is important that we continue to push for vaccine mandates the most aggressively we possibly can, said State Assembly member Buffy Wicks. Buffy told this new.
Did you say Buffy or Bucky?
Buffy. B-U-F-F-Y.
Oh, that sounds like she's got a PhD in something, I'll bet.
Well, it sounds like she and Barbie might have gone to the same university. She was the author of the workplace mandate bill. She is a state assembly member. Wow. So she wrote this workplace mandate bill. The legislation imploded almost immediately. So I don't think she wrote it very well.
Maybe she wrote it out with a crayon.
I'm guessing that she had her big box of 64 Crayola crayons.
64 crayons. I'll bet you she had one with a sharpener on the side, too.
That was always my favorite. Yeah. Anyway, in March of 2022, her worker vaccine proposal died. It was strongly opposed by firefighter and police unions whose membership would have been subject to the requirement. I don't think the anti-vaxxers carry much weight in Sacramento with my colleagues, she said. They are a pretty insignificant part of the equation. The public safety unions are the ones that carry the weight and the influence in Sacramento. California professional firefighters and other public safety groups argued in written opposition to the bill that the mandates would interfere with their ability to negotiate employment requirements with their employers. To summarily remove these bargained policies with a blanket mandate sets a dangerous and demoralizing precedent, wrote the group, which represents 30,000 firefighters. Schools were also supposed to be subject to a strict vaccine mandate. In October of 2021, Democratic governor, why do you even need to tell us that he's a Democratic? Gavin Newsom announced that California, Gavin Newsom announced that California would become the first state to require shots for school children starting in July 2022. That deadline has since been pushed back to at least July of 2023. Give it up, Gavin. And Newsom's order came with a loophole that will allow parents to opt their kids out by claiming a personal belief exemption. All right, so we're back to freedom of choice. That's where we should have been the whole time. In January, when California routinely topped 100,000 new cases a day, lawmakers introduced legislation to prohibit personal belief exemptions. They can't do that, I don't think. Those are not allowed for any required or for any other required childhood vaccines. Again, they soon backed off, saying the vaccination rate among kids was so low that shots should not be required until they're broadly available in pediatricians' offices. About 60% of eligible Californians are fully vaccinated and have received a booster shot, while only 35% of kids have received their first two doses. Instead of implementing the mandates, the state should focus on educating, reaching out to parents, says an OBGYN He was among the legislators who introduced a package of vaccine bills. I'll tell you right now, I'm sick of reading about California. They are so out of touch with not only reality, but the concepts of human freedom. I'm looking at the last page of this article, and Rose Kapilowski, a Democratic strategist who works on the pro-vaccine lobbying push, likened the vaccine beliefs to climate change. Voters say they care, but other more tangible issues such as gas prices and reproductive rights become urgent to them. If things were as bad now as they were in January and February, there would be more concern and action, said this other woman who is an executive director of the Pro-Vaccine California Immunization Coalition. She said, I'm disappointed that people are not taking the long view. Well, frankly, we're disappointed with you, lady. And we're happy that at least a breath of fresh air has moved back into the California political environment. So they're gonna spring again. The minute there's another excuse for them to clamp down on the freedoms that people should have that are guaranteed by the Constitution, they're going to do it. They're going to take every possible advantage of that.
I think Buffy ought to start focusing on the monkeypox coming up. I mean, I don't hear anything about the monkeypox coming from California.
Well, listen, she's a legislator. You're going to be hearing plenty from Buffy and her buddies, I think, when monkeypox starts spreading in California. They're probably going to lie just like they did about the AIDS panic, where they said, listen, we got to lie and say that women are equally at risk because otherwise nobody will pay any attention to us. And that's what they did. They lied and said that everybody, little kids, everybody is an equal opportunity AIDS carrier, which was a bunch of garbage.
Yep. I can't wait till they move over to the monkeypox because I'm getting tired of hearing about Corona.
Monkeypox sounds almost funny by comparison to what they do in the land of coronavirus.
Well, and then I'll just mention one thing, just kind of like a teaser for the audience for next time. Most of the pictures that you see on the internet that are portraying the devastating impact of monkeypox, it's not even monkeypox. The pictures they are using are smallpox and or other things.
Oh, no. You mean they're lying?
Are they? Oh, no.
It's incredible to think that they would not be telling us the complete truth.
If they were, you know, I think what happened, Doug, is they went to the stat or the, you know, the picture archive, you know, the licensed picture archive that everybody goes to.
Yeah.
They didn't have any monkeypox in there. So they went to the closest thing. Give us just generalized pox.
Jesus. Well, I'm shocked and disturbed. And I bet Fauci is not involved in this because I know he's an upstanding citizen that would never lie to the people.
Yeah, it's among, you know, there's Sleepy, Grouchy, and Fauci.
Fauci.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know. Boy. So anyway, that I think we need to close up shop. We have done a pretty good job of using up our time. We have thoroughly enjoyed all of you being with us. Thank you so much. We always enjoy it. And don't forget, send Doug some email at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Go buy your paperbacks. Number, well, it's 2022.
The numbers are green.
The numbers are green. And there's audio versions. There's Kindle versions. Oh, by the way, I was going to look up to see just exactly what the difference in temperature is between Phoenix and your Fortress of Solitude at 14,000 feet.
Ooh, it might not be that high.
Will it be lower?
It might not be 14,000 feet.
I think I'm pretty sure I might be about 10,000 feet off. But
well, there you go. So what's the temperature differential?
I'll look it up for next time.
Oh, I thought you were about to announce it.
For those of you who are into aircraft and flying and all that sort of stuff, there's a given formula for every 1,000 feet. How much the temperature drops. So
I think
you guys write down in your notes that be expecting to hear that next time. I will give you that formula. So when I say Doug is living at 14,000 feet, you'll know how to calculate how high he really is.
Last night, the temperature differential between downtown Phoenix and Cave Creek was 5 degrees. Yeah, so I think that's like 1,500 feet in elevation.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. You could have been 100 other places and you weren't. You were with us. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, now residing in Cave Creek, but originally from Oklahoma. I had a heck of a time getting him out of his boots and his hat when he got here.
All right. Bye-bye, Randy.